Welcome to the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. I'm your host, James Renford Powell. And as you know, we have had 54 weeks of support material on this show when we started it. And if, in case any of you are new or you are forgotten about it, you can go to blogtalkradio.com. That's B-L-O-G-T-A-L-K. blogtalkradio.com/Renford, R-E-N-F-O-R-D. And that'll take you to the home page of Radio by Renford. And we have probably 5 years of shows in the archives there. And you can go all the way back and find week one, week two, week three, week four of the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. If you have anyone who would like to listen to the show, but is they're not online or they're traveling or whatever, they can call in on 347-838-9142. That's 347-838-9142. And if you would like to ask a question, you just press the one button on your touchtone dial, and that'll bring you in for your question of my guest this evening, Annie Hess. Now, Annie Hess is first and foremost a mother, and she's a mother who has lost a son to street violence. She began journaling in order to cope with the pain and has now published a book, A Life After Homicide. She has a message for families that have suffered loss, but particularly to senseless violence. So we'll be talking to Annie after the Renford Revelations. Keep in mind that you can go to Blog Talk Radio and catch any of the old shows. And after, almost immediately after this show, you will be able to go back and find our interview with Annie Hess. The time now is for the Renford Revelation. As you know, each week I do my Renford Revelation. This is a blog. It goes to www.iam-cor.org. That's iam-cor.org. And forward slash that and put blog. Now, iam-cor.org is the virtual campus of the Institute of Applied Metaphysics. There's free ebooks up there. You can view the courses, all three levels, what books are in there. You can go to the bookstore, you can learn about the establishment of the Institute and so forth. But without going all the way into the virtual campus, you can simply type in iam-core.org/blog and read any of the blogs. You can comment on them, you can be positive or negative, that's up to you. And there are a lot of them up there because I produce one per week. Right? Tonight's Renford Revelation is called Knowing versus Believing. Knowing versus Believing. In the Renford Revelations, we will look at ancient text, including the Bible, and utilize the language of the mind, the symbols by which we can come to understand more than just a surface interpretation. Jesus told his disciples that he had revealed the mysteries to them. When they asked him why he taught in parables, he explained that their eyes were dull of hearing and their ears were dull of hearing and their eyes were closed. He had to speak to them in a symbolic way we call parables. If we want Sunday school pablum, there are thousands of preachers, priests, and rabbis ready, willing, and able with simple answers to complex questions and weighted with dogma. Jesus provided the answers in a way that listeners could figure out for themselves based on their life experience. Virtually anyone and everyone, if forced to do so, can tell us what they think they believe. Often they can even tell us who has been most influential in their lives, but few have much idea of where these beliefs originated. We live in a country where the Judeo-Christian ethic permeates our work and activities, whether we are Christian or not. These beliefs and our ethics have been forged by 2,000-plus years of developing Christianity, not counting Judaism, for which most think it sprang. Our thinking is based on what we have been taught from childhood by parents, teachers, and books and movies. These are beliefs we have adopted because those we love and respect said they were so. However, there is a way we can come to know as opposed to simply accepting what we have been taught. Knowing something can only come from personal experience. Anything short of the personal experience is an acceptance on our part of what others say they have experienced. Whether we believe them or not has to do with our confidence in them, not in personal knowledge. The way we can know is by focusing on the process of identifying and verifying the universal laws in our life experience. These universal laws are not some set of rules or a dogma that I've dreamed up. They are not original to me or any spiritual or metaphysical writer. They are not a set of commands like the Ten Commandments. They are principles that existed before there could be matter, as described in Proverbs 8:22. They are reflected in the statements made by the Vedic writers, Jesus, Buddha, Lao Tzu, Muhammad, and other masters. Each time Jesus is recorded as opening his mouth to speak, he was illustrating or explaining one of these universal principles. The same is true of the other masters I mentioned. There was something so important about these principles that the masters spent their lives attempting to leave behind someone who understood what they were saying. If it were not for the different cultures from which they came, it would have been more evident that they are talking about the same 13 principles. What is the real difference between believing and knowing? Believing and knowing are two sides of the same coin. Some religious leaders raise faith to such a height that it would appear to have no association with knowing. Even in a rudimentary study of New Testament writings, one will note that faith comes by hearing. One must first hear or read something in order to believe it. What is the connection between the two? We can have all the faith in the world, but if it is only based on what we have heard or been taught, it has little value for us. On the other hand, we can have all the knowledge in the world, but if we don't have the faith to do anything with it, there's no value for us. Metaphysical studies are not some kind of hocus-pocus or mystery teaching that requires a guru or contemplating our navels in the Himalayas. It is not a discipline that requires an extensive stay in an ashram or monastery. It is a study of what comes before a physical manifestation. If we look around the room we are in, every chair, every appliance, and even the house itself had to exist in someone's mind before it could possibly be created physically. So there is a big mystery. There is the big mystery about what metaphysics actually is. It is what comes before something can be created. Meta, mind, physics, physical reality. Thought creates form, and without thought there can be no form. Now, if we understand what metaphysics consists of, we can begin to experience and experiment with believing and knowing. There is a famous saying, anything the mind of man can conceive and believe, it can achieve. What is the value of such a study in our lives? If we have been able to identify and verify the universal principles in the teachings of Jesus or any of the great masters, it is because we have identified those same principles in our life experiences. We have a different perspective. We have internalized significant events in our lives that tell us what they said was real and not some high-sounding discourse. We will know it is true because we've been there and done that. We know it. There are no longer believers. In fact, we are no longer believers, but knowers. And with this knowledge, we only need the faith to make whatever we want to create manifest on the physical plane. There is another benefit which is invaluable. Whenever we read a book, attend a seminar, listen to a sermon, hear a teacher, or see on television a purveyor of wisdom, we will know whether they know or not. We will know whether they are speaking from having been there and done that or whether they are speaking from traditional teaching requiring their acceptance on faith and therefore our acceptance in the same manner of what they have said. Whether they are religious or not, with the process of identifying and verifying the universal principles, a new perspective is created in all aspects of our life. As noted, Jesus referred to some of those he taught as those whose ears were dull of hearing and whose eyes were closed. You can open your eyes and ears and beginning with the self-observation and metaphysical studies. I call it four pillars, and the four pillars are identification, verification, observation, and meditation. It all starts with us. It has to do with us, not with someone else. Thank you very much. That is my Renford Revelation for August the 12th, 2015. And now let's get to my guest. My guest is, just a moment, I'm having a little difficulty here. There we go. My guest is Annie Hess, and I mentioned a little bit about her to you just a moment ago. Let me get, I have a little bit more detail on Annie, if it's not disappeared on me here. Annie, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jim. How are you?
Okay. Annie, let me read a little bit of this information here, and you correct me and bring them up to date if I give any part of this wrong, okay?
Okay.
The book is actually called God's Grace is Sufficient, A Life After Homicide. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Because when I was talking about it earlier, I just called it A Life After Homicide.
Yes.
Now, at the time, your husband was alive, and there were some difficulties there, so you used a pen name, a nom de plume, Gene Jackson.
Well, it was my ex-husband.
Ex-husband.
Yes, I've remarried since then, yeah.
Okay. And so if you've seen the book out there, Life After Homicide with Gene Jackson, you were looking at the author's book, Annie Hess. She was born in Ashland, Mississippi, and moved to Memphis, Tennessee in 1972. Her husband, Carl, and her have two sons, and Christopher is deceased. She also has a grandson, Christopher, named after her oldest son. She works as a claims representative for a major insurance company and has been there 20 years. Her oldest son was murdered in March 2007 by two young black men. She wrote the book in journal format from journals she kept going through this tragedy that had affected her family. And she now speaks to groups and talks and works with others who have experienced similar events or are concerned about such horrific types of incidences. And what she is saying is that God's grace is truly sufficient, and if you depend solely on Him, He can get you through anything, including such a serious event in one's life. Annie, had you ever written any before you began journaling?
No, this was the first time that I really just sat down and write and wrote anything. When I started writing, that was actually the way that I coped with the death of my son, was to journal through it. It was difficult for me when it first happened. And it was difficult for me to get through. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you know much about the circumstances, why it occurred? I mean, most of it seems so senseless anyway. But do you know much of the story?
Just from what we've heard when the detectives in the Shelby County Sheriff's Department was investigating the death of my son. Mm-hmm. From my knowledge, and when we first heard about it, it was two young men that was going to a school to try to recruit my youngest son into a gang, and my oldest son interceded. And not too long after that, they met him on the trail, and we didn't know that he was selling marijuana at the time, and when he found out that they was there to rob him, he turned around to run away, but they shot him in the back and left him for dead.
So you said he was dealing in marijuana?
Yes, he was selling marijuana that we found out the day after he passed away.
So
that was something that I didn't know about.
Yeah. So it was not like you're living in a slum area or in a high crime district of Memphis. I mean, you're living in Cordova.
Right.
And this occurred in Cordova.
Yes, it did.
Yeah. And to some degree, I guess he was trying to protect his younger brother.
Yes. Yes, he was. That's how this whole thing got started. One of the young men called our house and used a different name than what his real name was and wanted to meet my son on the trail, I guess, to buy some marijuana. And everything unfolded from there. And we actually kept the recordings, and I have no idea why we kept them, but when they were investigating his death, we let them hear what he was saying over the phone. And he was using a different name than what his name was. And my youngest son recognized his voice and told the police officers, "I know who he is. I know that voice." Mm. And that's how they got his name and found out that he was the one to set the whole thing up.
Mm. And you said trail. Do you live in is it a kind of a semi-rural area or back? Huh?
It is. It's an unincorporated part of Cordova. And there's a walking trail not far from where we live. And they call it the trail, but it's where you can walk around. And there's two lakes. And where he was running, my son was running, he ran down into where the lake was, and they shot him there. I'm not sure how he got there. They said he tried to crawl out, and he had scars on his knees where he was trying to get out of where he was. And one of the comments at the trial was the young man that set the whole thing up told them when he was on the stand said that he heard him take his last breath or gasp for his last breath. And the family just burst out and started laughing. And I don't understand that. Hmm. I still don't understand how senseless.
You mean the family
is.
Of the.
Yes, of the young
the
man
one
that set
who
the whole thing up.
Did the shooting.
No, not the one that did the shooting. The one that set that put all this in motion, his family. Mm. The one that did the shooting, none of his family ever showed up to trial.
Now, they were convicted.
Yes, they were. The one that did the shooting got life in prison, and the other one got 20 years.
Mm. So your response to that or the way you tried to deal with that is you started journaling. Now, that was a lot of writing you did.
Yes.
In fact, most of what you were writing did not end up in the book, as I understand it. It may end up in another book, but not in this current book.
Right, not in this book. There's several other journals that I didn't touch on when I was writing this book.
Now, a life after homicide, I know that you're trying to communicate this, what that's like. I'm sure that there are people in Memphis that have experienced something very, very similar, if not exactly the same. But what were you hoping to accomplish from the book?
That no matter what we go through, even through tragic events like this, where you've lost a loved one, and I never, ever thought that I would be in this place, but that God's grace is always sufficient. He can get us through anything. Mm-hmm. And at the life after homicide came when it came about when I finally could move forward and not just continue to lay down and just let my life pass away, just go away. And I had to move forward because of my husband and my other son, Jonathan. And that's how the life after homicide came about.
Now,
it's
are
not
you,
for me to just stay stuck in this place, but to help, maybe help someone else, not just myself, but maybe other people out there that have gone through similar situations that I'm in.
Are you speaking at to different organizations, churches, or about the book, or are you just letting the book do the talking for you?
Well, I'm scheduled to speak at a shelter in South Haven, and I haven't gotten a date set yet, but I'm speaking to, and I speak to anyone that I can about this, because it was a long time before I could even talk about my son's death to anyone else. But the more I talk about it, the more I see that it helps others, that they have a story to tell. Not just me, but other people that have gone through this, they have a story to tell, that they can help someone else get through what we've gone through, what my family has gone through.
Have you been able to make contact with many other parents who have the same experience?
Yes, I have. And I've noticed that a lot of the parents, they can't move forward. They're still stuck in where their kids went, when their kids were murdered or when their child was murdered. They're still stuck there. And I'm trying to help maybe that they can move forward, just as I have, just to keep moving forward, because we have more to live for. And I'm not saying that I'm living because I want my son's life to mean something. I don't want him to, and I know it does mean something because of this book and because of me, because I'm out there telling the story about how my son passed away. At some point, we've got to stop the violence. And it's not just, we've got to do something. We just can't keep sitting down and watch this happen to us, to black people. We can't keep doing this. And I saw something the other day where someone said Black Lives Matter, and that bothered me, because all lives matter. And when I heard the part Black Lives Matter, and I took it to mean that because the police were involved, and it bothered me because two black men killed my kid, my son. Does it mean that his life doesn't matter because he was killed by two black people and not by the police? And that, I can't grasp that. That bothers me a lot. And I hate when people jump on a bandwagon and say that Black Lives Matter. All lives matter. It doesn't matter what color your skin is. All lives matter. That's the bandwagon we need to be on. And that's the message that we should be putting out there, that all lives matter. We need to stop the killing. It's got to stop somewhere. And if I can help one person to put down just that gun and turn around and say, this is not what I'm going to do, I've done what I needed to do.
Well, that is, it's interesting that the police chief here, who is black, also said all lives matter when he was talking about the police officer who was shot recently, and it's been so much in the news. Annie, we have a caller, and I know this number and I know this man. This is Reverend Robert J.V. McMillan from Little Rock, Arkansas. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Thank you, James. I appreciate that. And I want to share with you, Miss Annie, that you have our sympathy, and I can feel your pain, and I know that your anguish is being helped by what you are doing now, by being able to feel that you are putting some positive energy into a very, very negative situation. And so I applaud you for that. and I understand what it's like to lose a child, and so unless somebody has been there with that, they really can't tell you that they know how you feel.
Yes, sir.
Because what you say to them then is, I know you really don't, and I hope that you never do. But when we do know how that feels, then we also understand how it is that a person is doing whatever it is that they are doing to both make it cathartic for themselves and for the whole situation, and to do something for mankind that will hopefully not allow this to happen to somebody else. So
yeah.
I applaud you for that, and I will share with you that certainly Jim and myself and all of us here at RBR Network will do whatever it is that we can to support you in that effort. And how long ago did this happen?
It happened March 2007.
Okay,
yes,
so
sir.
This 15, so it's been 8 years.
Yes, sir.
Okay, all right. So with time, it does help, because you learn different ways of coping with it, you see. But
yes,
but the pain itself will only go away as you recognize that your son gave of himself and of his life in order that others might be saved. And so through what you are doing right now, that is going to save others. And your son is very much aware of what is going on right now, Miss Annie, and he knows, and he is so proud of you and what it is that you are doing. And, Jim, I'm not trying to take your show, but I just had to call and share that and say that. I don't even know what it was that made me call, other than to just support my partner who is doing the program tonight. But I'm so glad I did, and just always know that you have people that you don't even know who are willing and wanting to support your effort, and that you will get through it.
Yes, sir.
Is not easy, but it gets easier, you see? And know that your son did not give his life in vain. Now, if I might address that thing about Black Lives Matter, that came from a perspective where it seemed that many, many people, white officers is who that was directed at, that to them Black lives didn't matter. So that chant then came about. And then, of course, when the police officer, who happened to have been African-American, said, all lives matter. Well, yes, all lives do matter to all of us, and that is what it is all about. So thank you so much for doing what you're doing, and I assure you that we will do everything. I would love to have you on my program as well sometime,
yes,
to talk about this opportunity, okay?
Yeah,
yes,
thank
sir.
You.
Thank
Robert,
you so
now I know that here we had, because Reverend Eric, I know that some of the people from Unity Christian down on McCorkle Road attended this peace rally that we had over here, which was mixed races, and it was involving the police there too, and it was, kind of pleading, cool it, just cool it.
Right.
Is there anything like that going on in Little Rock?
There is. There is all over the United States now in areas. There are mothers who have come together. There's an African-American set of, like, Mothers Against Drunk Driving. There's that organization. There are all types of organizations that have come together. I just had a young man on my program last week, Jim, who is a police officer here in Little Rock, who is helping parents with children who have problems and get in trouble as youngsters, and then move on to become somebody like this kid that shot your son, Miss Annie. And so we're trying to help people to understand that you have to do things differently, because this is not the Wild Wild West, and it is not television, and it is not the movies. When you shoot somebody, they die dead, and so they're not going to get up and play the next week. It's not like that. So you have to think before you even go out and move about to do something ridiculous like this. So, yes, Jim, in answer to your question, there are a number of folks over here as well as in Memphis, and I think even John Gilmore's church has a group of folk as well that are doing some things to support people like Annie Hess.
And did you
appreciate that?
Yeah. The did you complete your trip to Washington?
I did not. I had to pull back because of health challenges, Jim. But I will be over your way on the 23rd and the 30th. And so I look forward to us getting together and perhaps even to sit down with Mrs. Hess and her family and share some things personally. Because Mrs. Hess, what happened was my wife and my two children died in a fire. And so you know, she was 30 and the kids were 10 and 6. So I appreciate that. But that was my experience. And from that, then I started doing what I am doing now to help other people. And so when I tell people that, yes, I do understand how you feel, then they know what I mean. And then, of course, they are more willing to listen. Like, people are now willing to listen to you because of the fact that they know what you have gone through, and they are wanting to prevent some other mother and themselves from having to go through that as well.
Yes,
well,
sir. And I just wish that we would get to a point where the violence would just completely stop. We've got to change our mindset about what we're doing and about what we're doing to each other. And that's my message.
Do.
We've got to stop.
We do. And you know what? We are moving in that direction. All of the things that are happening now in our society, Mrs. Hess, are things that are helping people to say, wait a minute, what's going on? Why are we doing this? And people are changing. And the more that we talk about and focus upon the good things that are happening, the more and more people do those good things, and the more we hear about it. Our programs are geared towards that. And towards what is going on now, so that we can bring awareness to not only the United States of America, but to Memphis, Tennessee, to Lubbock, to your street where you live, and because Jim just mentioned that you're in Cordova, so you're in a neighborhood that lends itself to people being educated, to people who are doing things to generate and promote their city and so forth and so on. And so it's unusual for that type of thing to happen. But no neighborhood in our world now, and specifically in the South, is going to be allowed to be okay without that happening. Everybody is happening. So the people that would say, well, that's not going on in my neighborhood, can no longer say that. And that's a good thing. It's a good thing that they can't say that, because maybe now they will get up and support you and support me, support other people in helping others to learn how to do some things differently, so that we do help these kids to understand. One of the things I heard you say a few minutes ago was that when it was said that this young man climbed, your son, was climbing out, and the young man there laughed. He laughed because he didn't know what else to do. He laughed out of ignorance, and he laughed out of an uneasiness. You see, he was uneased by that whole thing.
It wasn't him that started the laughter. It was his grandfather. And that, it showed me that from where he came from, there was no training. There was no home training there. And it started at home.
That was in the courtroom, wasn't it?
That was in the courtroom. It starts at home. The grandfather started the laughter,
okay.
And it followed on from there. And the judge had to clear the courtroom. So a grandparent should know better.
Right. But see,
someone
ignorance
has lost their
no ignorance, Mrs. Hess, has no age. You see,
correct.
If a person brought ignorance all the way through and never learned any differently, then they will still do the same thing. And so that grandfather, you see, was showing us that ignorance is still there and personified in him. And that then shows us where it is that we have to reach, because we can't just stop with the kids. We can't just stop with their parents. We can't just stop with the next generation. We have to go all the way through all the onion layers so we can peel it all back and help people to understand that God force is within us, that which is within us is stronger than anything that is outside of us, and that we don't have to kill each other. We don't have to steal from each other. We don't have to take from each other, because it is there for us, and God will provide, you see.
Right.
And so when we start sharing it in this way with our little people, and then with the bigger people, and then even with the older, ignorant people, then they get it. And as they get it, then they share it, you see. And that then means that your son did not give his life in vain.
No, he didn't.
Right.
And I know that.
Right.
Thank you for calling in there, Robert, and for your comments. It's much appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you, Robert.
You bet. You guys have a great evening.
Thank you.
You too.
Let's take just a moment and let people know how they can get a copy of the book. And again, the title is God's Grace is Sufficient, A Life After Homicide. Where do you have the book available?
The book is available at Amazon.com, and it's available at BarnesandNoble.com and also at WestbowPress.com, and it's WestbowPress.com.
Okay, and if you are making contact with other families.
Yes, I am.
Is there an organization that you've sponsored or become a member of?
Not an organization yet, just families that have gone through what I've gone through. A lot of the people that are working with families that have lost a loved one, I get their contact information through them, and hopefully my book can help them, or what I say to them personally will help them move forward. And some people just can't move forward because they've lost a loved one, and especially a child. It's hard for other people to move forward, and I understand that. It took me a while to move forward. Jim, it was times that I was sitting or just even in the shower, and it overwhelmed me so much that I didn't have my son here, that the water just ran cold, and I found myself sitting on the floor of the shower, not knowing how I got there and how long I was there. But through God's grace, he brought me through all that. If God was not there, and if I didn't know how to depend on him, I could have stayed in that dark place, and that's not a place I want to be. I want to make sure that this story gets out and I can share my story with someone else, and maybe mother like me, a father, can move forward because of what I've gone through, and it could resonate with them because of what they've gone through.
Now, in your book, are you addressing specifics of how to cope, what steps one can take?
I go through the grief part, because none of us grieve the same way, and there's so many facets of grieving. And some people say, well, and this was said to me maybe a month or so after my son was killed, you should be done with this by now. And for someone to say that, you can't say that to someone if you've not been in their shoes, if you haven't gone through of losing a child. And for someone to say that to you, that to me is heartless. we go through so many facets of grief, and then we go through it again, and we go through it again. But
we're just not supposed to outlive our children.
No, we're
not. And I've got a friend here who's, in fact, a retired police officer, 75 or so years old. His son had a heart attack and died at 49. He is finding it difficult to move forward. And that's an older man with an older child. It's very difficult to move past the loss of a child, I mean, at any age.
Yes, it is.
In your book, I know that you're relating the circumstances and what happened, but how are you advising or working with your reader to what steps they should take?
The steps that they can take, based on my experience, is always have a support group around you. Always have someone there that you can talk to. Even if you don't want to hear them say anything, at least have someone there that can just give you a hug. And that's what my husband did for me. Mm. He never said that this kid's going to be okay. He never said that we're going to get through this. He was just always there to hold me when I needed him to hold me. And I had my pastor, Pastor Vince Robinson with Christ Fellowship Church. He was always there to talk to me. And you need that support group around you. If you don't have somebody to support you, there is no way that you can get through this alone. And we have to depend on God to get us through the things that we're going through. And if you don't have that, you got to have that foundation to move forward. And that's how I think I got through this, because God was always there. He never moved. And one of the things I mentioned in my book was, I was sitting on the floor in the bathroom, and I asked God, why did you let this happen? And I heard it clear as day. God said, I asked him, where was he when my son passed away? He said, I'm in the same place that I was when my son passed away. He never moved. I did. I turned my back on him. But when I turned back around and I saw him, I knew then that I could go through, I can get through this, and I can help someone else get through it.
Annie, do you have an email or a contact number that you would like to give to listeners that anybody who has suffered such a loss or who would like to be involved in helping in some way or in organizing?
Yes.
Is there a way they can reach you?
Yes, my email address is Annie, A-N-N-I-E, dot Hess, H-E-S-S, at att.net, and my contact number is 901-831-8917.
All right, let's repeat it just in case somebody didn't catch all of that.
It's Annie. The email address is Annie, A-N-N-I-E, dot H-E-S-S, at att.net, and my phone number is 901-831-8917.
Well, Annie, back a few months ago, Unity Christian Church on McCorkle Road hosted on behalf of Healing the Hood. Now, Healing the Hood, I've had the young man on that founded that organization, and he has an office in the Hickory Hill Mall, where he works with young people with music and doing different things. But they brought Trayvon Martin's son, or rather his mother, to Memphis. And there was standing room only. Now, this is not a really small church. It was absolutely full, standing room only at the back. The fellowship hall was full of people with the closed circuit television. There were a lot of people there. This this is something that concerns parents and citizens, and I hope you never feel like you're walking that road alone, and I hope you will do your best to connect up with others on this so that there's a groundswell.
Yes, sir.
Where do you go from here? What do you see happening for Annie Hess and this book?
I just want to keep putting the message out there, and I just want to keep putting the message out there that people can read the book or even contact me to talk about what's going on, that they've gone through what I've gone through. Maybe I have something to say to them that will that could help them to move forward like I'm moving forward. And that's what I want. I want to help others to get to the point where they can move forward and not just stay stuck in the darkness.
Now, have there been any organizations that have contacted you?
No, not at this point.
Well, that's so no group that of organized concerned citizens and people who have lost children and so forth. There's been no group contact you.
No groups, no, just individuals, but no groups.
And the church, I guess.
Right, and the church.
Which would be your church.
Yes, sir.
There is something right there. If nobody has been in touch with you, then are all parents who are going through this, are they experiencing the same thing? It's almost as if nobody cares. There's no organization.
It does seem that way, that no one cares, that when you lose a child, my pastor was great, and he still is great. And if churches were more like my church, and I'm not putting them on a pedestal or anything like that, I'm just saying that to reach out and to help those parents that are going through what I've gone through, to be there for them. To not close your door or to cut your phone off, but to be there to help that person get through what they've gone through. And I commend my pastor for doing that and my first lady, because they were always there. And I've seen them go beyond doing things for others, for people that have lost loved ones, just not me, but to see them do it for others that are in our church. To see them do that is amazing. That you would give your life to, that you would give up your time to help someone else, and that's what I want our community to start doing—to reach out to families that have lost loved ones, and to help those people to help us get through what we're going through. Don't just leave us there to try to figure out things on our own.
Well, that may be your job, Annie. You may have to be the one that galvanizes that into action and take the lead. But
well, I'm ready to do that.
Yeah, once you do that, you may find that there are others who have fledgling organizations that are trying to do it. But no family that goes through that should feel like they're treading down the road alone, and somebody ought to be in touch with them.
Exactly.
And I hope you're able to do that. I know that Annie is taking steps to publicize her book now and to make some things happen. So if you would email annie.hess@att.net, is that correct?
Yes, sir. And there's also a Facebook page, and it's set up under Gene Jackson, which is, it has the cover of my book on the Facebook page. And you can reach me that way also.
Okay. Facebook by going to Gene Jackson.
Yes, sir.
That's it. And that's all you need to know?
Yes, sir. But it just has the book on it, God's Grace is Sufficient, A Life After Homicide.
Okay. And you gave a phone number a while ago. You want to give that again?
Yes, sir. That number is 901-831-8917.
Okay. And if anyone would like to make contact, if they would, if you would like to have Annie talk to a group, church or otherwise, or concerned citizens or families who have lost a loved one, then by all means, Annie would love for you to contact her about that.
Yes, sir.
What, is there any specific message that you would like to, and I mean, we've been talking about it the whole show, and what the message of the book, but could you condense this down a little bit and take a few moments to talk to the listening audience?
I just want the listening audience to know that I've gone through, and I know that other parents out there have gone through similar situations. We never, ever thought that we would see ourselves in places, in these places, in a place like this. But when we walk through the storm and we get through the fog and we can see the light, there's always someone on the other side that's going to need us to help them also. And we can turn around and help those people to get to where we are. And in doing that, we have to depend on God to help us through that. And also our churches need to get more involved in helping us get the parents that have lost loved ones. And I know that a lot of us, because of things that are going on right now and the things that we see on television, there's always a murder. There's always someone that's being killed. That you, every time you turn on the TV, there's some child that has lost their life or some young person that has lost their life because of some idiots. And I'm saying that because I mean that. But we've got to help each other. And we can't get through this without helping each other. And that's my message, is we have to stop doing what we're doing now. Make a different choice. We have to make different choices. And everybody has a choice. You can either choose to do wrong or you can choose to do right. Make the choice to do right and stop the violence.
Well, thank you very much for being with us on the show tonight, Annie. And if you would like to, her book, God's Grace is Sufficient, A Life After Homicide, available on Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble. And you mentioned another location?
Westbowpress.com.
Westbowpress.com.
All yes, right.
Sir. You can purchase the book there. Remember that she was using the nom de plume, Jean Jackson, Jean Jackson. By all means, pick up a copy of that book or call or email Annie at the, as we've mentioned it several times. If you have a problem remembering, you're not where you could write it down, then you can always email me, iamrenford@gmail.com. And I'll put you in contact with her. And thanks again, Annie, for being with us on the show. Thank you, Robert, for joining us and for your experience and words of wisdom with relation to the experience that Annie and so many others have faced in the loss of a young one to violence.
Thank you for having me, Jim.
You're very welcome, and we'll be seeing you soon. Annie will be with me on the Bookman Show. The Bookman Show is aired on Comcast Cable Network, Channel 17, at 9:30 on Saturday evenings. And I can't tell you when that show will be on, but we'll be taping it in a week or two. A couple of weeks before we tape it, and then it will be on, and so you can look forward to that as well. I want to invite you to go to iam-cor.org. As I mentioned earlier, this is the virtual campus of the Institute of Applied Metaphysics. There are three free ebooks there. All you have to do is go there and download it. There is a prototype of the new Lightways e-zine electronic magazine that you can download free. And you can view the 3 degree levels of study, what the courses are and what the texts are that are being used. And you can visit the bookstore where you will find my books, the Renford books. There are 15 books. And any of those are the blogs that I've invited you to go to, iam-core.org/blog. If there are any of the blogs or anything that you'd like to talk about, then email me, iamrenford, R-E-N-F-O-R-D, at gmail.com. Or you can get info at iam-core.org. There's a number of different places. If you'd like to know more about the organization, just Bing, Yahoo, or Google James Renford Powell, J-A-M-E-S, Renford, R-E-N-F-O-R-D, Powell, P-O-W-L-L, and there'll be plenty of information there about the organization. Also want to invite you to go to YouTube.com and type in Renford Broadcast Network. That's R-E-N-F-O-R-D, Broadcast Network. There are 6 sections. This is a very substantial YouTube site. You can find the first DVD of the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program there, give you some idea, a little taste of the program. You can view the Bookman shows are placed there. These are all authors that we have focused on, trying to focus on authors in the Memphis area. We do go pretty far afield from time to time, but that is a major effort. We also created the I Am Creative Network, IAMCN, which is directed by Kari Fleskis, which is a program of outreach and working with creativity, working with young people in writers, musicians, and actors, anybody in the creative area there. And that's something you can find at iamcreativenetwork.weebly.com. That's on a completely different site for that particular purpose. So check us out on all of these areas, Blog Talk Radio, YouTube, and the I Am Core website. We'd love to have you. And then join us again next Wednesday for another edition of the Laws of Material Wealth Personal Development Program. Have a good evening, everyone.